We are going to call this Hess meeting to order. It is March 1st, 2005, and it is about 3:40. Let the record reflect that the members present are Representative Gardner and Representative Cisna and myself, Wilson. Representative Seaton is at a budget subcommittee meeting, and Representative Coring is at a budget subcommittee meeting. But Representative Coring has already reviewed the bill, and he is right down the hall, and so he said that if we needed a vote, he would come. So he is in a right down the hallway, so if we need to do that, we will do that. So on our agenda today, well, first of all, my Hess committee meeting, or my Hess committee aide is Kathy Hope Erickson, and our secretary is Nikki Hughes, and our LIO person is Dawn Finley Groves. So thank you, everyone, for being with us today. And we're going to look at our committee substitute for House Bill 100, and it's our virology lab. And Dr. Monsager is here, and so if you want to come forward and kind of go through the bill quickly with us, and we will just look at the bill and see what you have to say about it.
Thank you, Chairman Wilson. I'm Dr. Monsager. I've been here several times, and I've touched on this bill on previous presentations, so I'm going to be quite brief in presenting committee substitute HB 100. This is the bill for construction of a state public health virology laboratory in Fairbanks, and hopefully you have slides in front of you. It should have been given to you before we started today. I just have a few slides today. I just want to introduce quickly, and then I'm available for questions.
It's under tab one of our in our three-ring binder toward the back, I think, is if you want to follow.
If you look at slide two, the first question that is important to understand that we've talked some about in previous, when I've been here previously, is the definition of the word virology. This is the identification and specialized testing about viruses. A whole series of them are listed there. I'm just going to highlight a couple stories like I've done previously. Rabies has been important in this state for many, many decades. And whenever one hears that an animal is being tested for rabies, that what has happened is that animal has been put down and the head has been sent to the lab in Fairbanks, and they then use brain tissue to identify whether rabies is present or not.
I have a question. Yes. Has there ever been a case of rabies in Alaska?
Chairman Wilson, there are often cases of animal rabies. I can't remember how many years ago there was since a human rabies. Do you remember, Deb? It's at least 20 to 30 years ago. There hasn't been any human rabies for a long, long time. But right now, as we speak, one of our villages in Alaska has animal quarantine in place because of rabies in the community up north. Some of the other viruses are listed there. West Nile virus, Alaska and Hawaii are the only states in the country that West Nile virus has not arrived at yet. The testing for that is in place, and birds have been evaluated for that over the last couple of summers. The question everybody's wondering about is, will that virus come north on the flyway from birds? And being prepared is important. All the other viruses we've talked about at previous events, the tests for SARS, when that was a big worry 3 years ago, CDC rapidly developed a test. And the way this works is once there's a new virus identified, then CDC and research scientists try and develop tests for it. And as soon as they have one, then Sentinel Laboratories are the first where that test is implemented. And our virology lab is one of the 23 Sentinel Laboratories for the United States. The reason it's important to the country is that because of the avian flyway, the bird flyway from Southeast Asia, birds come up here in summer, and so viral diseases that might switch across from birds to animals can come that way, and two, because of all of the trans-Pacific air cargo that goes through Alaska, it's also important that we be ready here in the western part of the United States to identify what might come. Just as a point of comment, flu disease, influenza, typically starts in Southeast Asia, moves around the world, so the virus that will, the next year's flu vaccine will be developed against is being developed against viruses that currently exist in Southeast Asia and actually one in California right now that has arrived in the Western United States at present.
Representative Sisna.
Madam Chair, thank you. How long has that existed? I mean, is that movement from Southeast Asia something that came with, does it go with birds or does it go with humans flying on airplanes or how does it go that way?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, I'm not sure I know the answer to that. I think it's both. In Southeast Asia, there's a much greater concentration of animals and human beings living in close proximity together, so the likelihood of jumping from animals to humans is more likely in that part of the world. And just the natural transmission of disease seems to move with the same direction of the jet stream moves around the world now. That's as much as I know about it. Mm-hmm. So here's a picture of the current laboratory space up at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. If you look at the next slide, a couple more pictures of what the current space is like. It's been up there for a long time, has about 5,000 square feet, and has lots of problems. Last summer, we had the Association of Public Health Laboratories ask them to come up and do an evaluation of our laboratory system and look for a recommendation as what we in Alaska should do. The problems with the current laboratory are identified there, and the quote at the bottom of slide 3 is a quote from their report. That because of the crowding, the viruses they're dealing with, ventilation problems, it's an accident waiting to happen.
I have a question. Do they have the proper ventilation hoods, you know, when they're over the wherever they're working, or do they even have that?
Chairman Wilson, yes. They have good hoods that's been retrofitted, obviously, into the space. And as our laboratory director, Dr. Gilley, says, they're doing biosafety laboratory 3 techniques in a biosafety level 2 facility. In other words, and we're using the fact that none of the staff have gotten influenza in recent years as an indicator that their techniques are good, but that's not the best practices. Next slide on slide 4 talks about why we should rebuild the facility and why we are recommending that it be rebuilt in Fairbanks. One is it's important that we keep our capacity as a state for rapid identification of known and then new viruses. I talked one of the previous times I was here about norovirus last Iditarod as to why speed is important, and I've also talked about measles here in Juneau some years ago about identification over a weekend. One of the recommendations from their report was that this state, given the fact that we live in a state with earthquake potential, having redundant capacity in another city is important. If we lost one of the two laboratories, we could then decide what are the most high priority, and we would move people, we would dump some less important tests, and could keep facilities, some services going.
Yes, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. That actually lead into my question, because Anchorage has a virology lab, correct?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, that's not quite correct. We have, and I think it's important, I'm glad you cued me to a point here, and that is that our public health laboratory system in the state has 3 laboratories, 2 in the Division of Public Health and 1 in the Division of Environmental Health in DEC. The laboratory that's being completed this summer in Anchorage, replacing the one that's in Palmer in Division of Environmental Health, is the Food and Animal Safety Laboratory.
Is that in DEC?
Yes. And that's where shellfish testing gets done, food safety, animals, dead animals identification, and so on. The public health laboratory that we have in Anchorage is a bacteriology and chemical laboratory. So it was, when it was completed 6-7 years ago, there was some extra capacity built into that laboratory. But after 9-1-1, mission expansion nationally to identify chemical toxins grew across the country, and so all of the expansion space in that facility has been filled up now with mission expansion of chemical issues such as sarin and other kinds of toxins and poisons as part of the biologic preparedness mission for the country and for us as a state. So then the third laboratory in our system of laboratories is the laboratory in Fairbanks, and the question for years has been how to replace and where to replace. that function.
In follow-up?
Representative Gardner?
When you talk about having a backup lab in case of some catastrophic thing, the Anchorage facility would be used in that way?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, what would happen, let's say we were out 10 years in the future and we lost a facility in Fairbanks for one reason or another, what would then happen is certain functions in the laboratory in Anchorage would be stopped, and they would use then the cabinets and would bring down the staff from Fairbanks and would do some of the most important virology tests temporarily. So you would prioritize services. Some would get dropped off, and the most high priority ones would be kept.
So even if it weren't a question of finances and not having duplicate labs, you would still want to build, would not want to build it in Anchorage?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, the debate has been for several years is, should the building in Anchorage be added onto and keep all the services together, or should it be kept in Fairbanks? The recommendation that we are putting forward this year is that we are better served as a state by having a facility in Fairbanks and a facility in Anchorage for redundancy purposes. Another reason is the staff skills in the laboratory in Fairbanks would be very hard to replace if we moved out of town, and the university is building its human biology mission. They would all get jobs in the university and wouldn't leave, so that's a short-term problem that should not be underestimated. Another reason is the university, since the last time this was talked about, UAF is building a human biology and genetics mission, and the biologists are very interested in being able to partner if this gets built in Fairbanks, because they then have access to this thing called a BSL-3 laboratory, a biosafety level 3 laboratory, for some of the research work that they won't be able to do in future years if it's not there.
Doctor, I have a question here. So in the design of the building, you are going to, obviously you can't all be working in the same spot, so are you designing the building so that they would have access to the lab at certain times, or are they going to have a different part of the building, or how do you perceive that to work?
Chairman Wilson, if you look at the last slide, it shows where the building will be built. It'll be built, added onto the Biologic Research and Diagnostics Facility that is under construction presently on UAF's campus, that's what I'm trying to say. And then that the research missions to the times that there would be federal, like NIH grants or other kinds of things, they would then work out sharing for different times of day, et cetera. We've talked to several laboratory directors that work in places like Iowa City, Iowa. The University of Iowa and the Iowa State Laboratory does this kind of a shared function. Champaign, Illinois does the same kind of a shared function. And both organizations benefit from the technical expertise, research expertise, and the public benefits by better use of facilities more hours a day.
I've actually been to the one in Iowa at the university there, and it does work very well there. So.
Yes. So that's what we're proposing, is a similar kind of relationship. If you look at slide 5, obviously this costs a lot of money. Laboratories like hospitals are very expensive to build. The financing is proposed to be certificates of participation. The Department of Revenue is here and can answer questions about the financing part of this. The long-term land lease negotiated with UAF, we've already talked that through with the university, and so if this gets funded this session, then UAF will make this available to the land available to the department at no cost for 30 years with two 10-year options, is what we're talking about in a no-cost land lease.
Madam Chair?
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is the existing under construction biological research and diagnostics facility UAF, or is it state?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, it's a UAF facility.
Oh, okay. So it is going to be a collaborative effort. Thank you.
Right. And then I already referred to the map showing you where it is compared to where the present facility is on the campus up in Fairbanks if it gets funded. So I'm open for other questions, available for other questions.
I have a question. Okay, so that the length of the actual loan is a 15-year loan then?
Chairman Wilson, that's correct.
And so how I mean, is the money coming out of the general fund to pay for this, or is the university, I mean, it's coming from the same spot. Either we give it to the university and they do it, or else we just give it to you. So I mean, exactly how does this work?
Chairman Wilson would be okay if the Department of Revenue commented on that.
Hello, Devin Mitchell. I'm with the Department of Revenue. I'm the state debt manager. So the question was, where's the funding going to come from to pay debt service? And you are correct. The general fund would pay annual debt service on this obligation.
So actually, it's not going to go through the university. It's just going to get built. The state's going to build it, and then the university is going to get to use it. And then in the state, too.
That's correct. Yeah, the university is, we already have had a couple of conference calls with university financial staff to ensure that we'll have the ability to provide the structure for the financing, because there will be a lease involved to facilitate the borrowing of the funds, the certificates of participation. What your certificate of participation is, you're participating in a lease, and so it's the same structure as a bond, but you call it a COP instead, and so it's a $5,000 interest in this lease that we're going to enter into with a trustee bank that will have a title interest in the facility. So it's a mechanism that allows the general fund to pay on the lease that goes to this trustee that disseminates through DTC to folks that would purchase these COPs as investments.
So it's going to be $2.3 million a year that the payments are?
That's a projection based on the 4.9% interest rate that's in the handout and in our fiscal note. The current interest rates are actually lower than that. That's a conservative estimate to try to deal with any future negative impact or negative market movement between now and the point in time at which we might issue these bonds. In our current discussions with DOT, which would manage the construction of the facility, it would appear that we would issue bonds in the latter half of calendar year 2005, so we'd have incremental debt service in 2007, probably less than what's indicated in the fiscal note, and again, hopefully interest rates would be lower than what's indicated.
Okay. And then after the loan is paid and the state is going to then lease it from the university, how's that arrangement going to be?
The state's not leasing the facility. There's a ground lease for use of the ground. The university, they have issues related to the university being a land grant university, and so they haven't subdivided that parcel, the 2,000 acres or whatever the university is in Fairbanks, and so they don't have the inability to, or they don't have the ability to segregate off a little piece and say, okay, this is going to be the state's now, and so. They have an arrangement where they'll have an initial term of lease and then optional renewals on that for, I can't recall what it is into the future.
Chairman Wilson, the discussions we've had with the university are that the land lease will be at no cost. Then we will have an operations agreement for maintenance and operations agreement. So, and that's in the fiscal note too, an estimated cost of about $200,000 a year for the bigger size and utilities and so on. And we've talked about all of that with the university in terms of how that agreement would be. But the financing lease, as you said, will be a 15-year, and then after that it's going to be an operational agreement of an estimated increased cost of $200,000 over our present agreement with university up there right now.
Okay, because there's three fiscal notes. So. We already know ahead of time how much the university is going to charge the state for the operations of that building.
Very approximately, and that's what's in the fiscal note.
And can you just, there's three fiscal notes, because can you just tell me what the total amount is?
The increased cost over our present cost is about $200,000 a year.
And is that pretty standard for the, how big is the building that you're in now, and you're going to be moving out of there and you're going into that other building? The building looks like the one you're in looks bigger than the part that you're building. So
Chairman Wilson, we presently have only about 5,000 square feet in that great big building that you see on the drawing.
Okay.
The net square footage, the usable square footage of the new building is a little over 11,000 square feet, so it's about twice as big.
Okay.
In terms of usable space, and so there'll be extra utility costs and heat and air movement and so on.
Okay, so are we going to be paying twice as much as what we're paying now, or I mean, what's the difference?
It's, I think, Chairman Wilson, if I remember correctly, we're presently paying about $150,000 a year. Is Arnold here? He's not back yet. And the extra cost will be another $200,000 on top of that. So it'll be about $350,000, so it'll be $200,000 more.
And everybody feels that's fair?
All the maintenance people and the utility people, if Arnold was here, he could come answer this question. But I'm assured that it seems like a reasonable number that we're talking about for this per square foot maintenance and operations cost.
Okay. Representative Gardner.
If I understand correctly, with this bigger facility and expanded functioning, you'll actually be doing additional, you have additional capacity for work. So it isn't just the extra space, but also other equipment and other facilities that you don't currently have access to.
Representative Gardner, that's the plan, that we will be able to keep up and be a state-of-the-art virology laboratory as equipment changes and as more tests come in and come to the state and as our population grows.
I'm asking as many questions as I can think of because I want to know why I understand this well.
Yes.
Does anybody else have any?
I don't have any questions right this second. I mean, I don't think... probably the only question would be, COP was what API was built with, right? So it's the same mechanism. It gives us a chance to get something going right away without having to come up with the full amount or something like that, right?
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, yes, the COP structure is a nice fit for standalone facilities like we're talking about here, where you have the need for a building. It isn't part of a broader package that would lend itself to a general obligation election type bonding, and it has been used most recently for the DEC Seafood and Food Safety Lab and API, a portion of the API, the new API, $16 million, was also funded with COPs.
Mm-hmm.
And then the HNSS lab was in Anchorage was also funded with COPs. And so this is the full circle on the labs with COP funding for new facilities.
When are those, will those other ones be finishing up? So I mean, I'm wondering what we're committing to in the long run. These are piling up, so how are we at, where are we at with that?
With the outstanding obligations we have, HNSS lab was issued in 1998 in January. It was a 10-year obligation. We just refunded that, refinanced it. It had an optional 7-year call that we took advantage of, so we've just recently achieved some savings on that old obligation.
Do we get a better interest then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, lower interest rate. And the final maturity will be in January of 2008 on that facility. The API facility and the DEC lab are more recent. The DEC lab was issued in 2003 in August, and it was also a 15-year amortization of that obligation, and so you wouldn't have final maturity until, 2018 or so. We do have other COPs outstanding that are older. Spring Creek Correctional Facility is one that will be maturing in the next couple of years, an older obligation that was in the $60 million range back in the late 80s. We have other types of facilities, the Soldotna Maintenance Facility, certain courthouses, the Palmer South Zone facility, which is a DNR forestry-related facility. So it's been used for a variety of standalone projects.
Now, is this all subject to setting that up I mean, do we have to do something? I mean, it doesn't automatically happen, or when we pass this bill, does it automatically happen, or do we have to say, okay, we said we've got the permission to build this, now we have to go set up this bond thing?
This bill will allow the, will give the authority to issue the COPs,
okay,
provide for the facility. You'll have to approve a budget next year. The next year's legislature will have to approve a budget to fund the debt service in 2007.
Okay.
That's what we did, yeah, with API.
Okay, well, I am going to take a brief at ease, and we will round up some votes. We are now back online. We were kind of waiting for someone to come and Representative Gardner.
Another vote.
They're giving me 3 minutes.
Okay. Okay, Representative Gardner.
Yes, I move committee substitute House Bill 100 from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying 3 fiscal notes.
Okay.
This is not a government budget busting bill, is it?
No. Well, that,
I'm familiar with it.
Okay. any questions? Hearing no objections, then I guess this bill is passed.
Right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Thanks for your diligence. I appreciate
okay.
it. And
thank you.
And I had already heard the bill in State Fair. So.
Yeah. Okay.
So
and thank you.
I think you were kind of eager to get this passed. What do you think?
A little bit.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. Now I haven't adjourned yet. I haven't adjourned. Just a little bit about next week.
Good.
Or actually,
this week.
Is that this Thursday, right?
Canceled.
Yeah, that's right. This week. I the trouble that we had today. Well, it's going to be worse Thursday. So we just canceled Thursday's meeting totally. So for next Tuesday, we're looking at. Actually, we're looking at hearing one House Bill 151, and that's the responsibility for care after eye surgery. So for anyone that is listening online so that they know, that's kind of what we're planning for next week. And hopefully we will, the budget subcommittee meetings will have ended by then, and we'll have smooth sailing, we hope. So anyway, having said all that, we adjourn.